For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome back, sports fans, to another episode of the Charity Stripe Podcast, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, the number one sports podcast network in Los Angeles. For those listening at home, on the road, in the air, or in the water, do you believe? We have a great show for you guys today. All-star, World Series winning pitcher Drew Pomerantz joins the boys, so buckle up, tuck it into your waistband, because here we go. 3, 2, 1. We're back.
We sitting here, I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice.
5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes! High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
Play clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Gives it to Jenkins for the championship.
He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Bases loaded. Two out. Hard hit into right. Back at the wall. Tie game.
John Cena.
We're back, baby. It's the Charity Stripe. Pitcher free throws, because they're free. Sode 246 coming hot at you guys, and Sode 245, and we have a great show. You heard it in the introduction. I'll be joined by Nikki Snacks Kreida and Alex Toss Me the Rock Disopolis, and of course, Drew Pomerantz, now of the San Diego Padres. It's a really awesome show, guys. And without any further ado, let's get into the interview. Drew Pomerantz, enjoy. All right, y'all, you heard it in the intro. We got all-star, World Series champ, now pitching for the San Diego Padres. Hey, Drew Pomerantz in the house. I almost got tricked up with the LA Chargers because all the San Diego teams are moving and grooving. But we have our San Diego Padres. How can I forget? Because of Nikki Snacks Kreider. Pitcher Drew Pomerantz, how you doing, brother?
Good. What's up, guys? How you doing?
We're doing great, man. Good to have you. Crazy offseason so far, and we definitely want to get into that in a little bit and hear what you've been up to. But let's talk about your career a little bit. Hear your story. Hear how you got to the show. You were picked originally by the Rangers, 12th round, I believe, and then you decided to go play ball at Ole Miss. What was that decision like, to bet on yourself in a way? Because you go on to be a future first-round pick, so there was a bit of a gamble there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, going out, I didn't want to go to college initially. My brother had signed out of high school like 4 years prior.
Yeah.
And I wanted the same route. But it came down to like a small amount of money, and I was, you know, right at the deadline, you know, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to college. And I mean, it worked out for me for 3 years there. And, you know, I got picked way higher than I did before, but it doesn't happen for everyone. So it's a little bit of a risk, but it literally came down like if it's like, if you sign at midnight, it's like 11:59. I was like, no, I'm going to college.
That's wild. Literally down to the wire. And then you go, you get drafted in the first round. What's that process like? Because it's a little different. Listen, the NBA draft, you kind of have your idea of the guys going like 1 through 3. Like, we know Zion, Ja, and RJ are going 1 through 3. Last year, the NFL draft is pretty similar. We pretty much have an idea of what's going to happen at the top. MLB really fluctuates. So what's draft night like then for you guys?
You know, I had a really good year. I had a really good year basically every year I was there. So I was kind of anticipating like, I'm going to get drafted a lot higher. And sometimes out of high school, teams were telling me one to the first or third round. They're telling me, different things. But I think sometimes they get scared they're going to draft you and then you're going to college and then they just waste a pick and all these different things. But when you come out of college, it's like, okay, you're obviously, there's only one place to go from here.
Yeah.
And, I knew I was going to get picked pretty high. And then they sent like a camera crew for to film me, my reaction, like when I got drafted. So I'm like, okay, well, I think I'm definitely going to get drafted. Now, or it's going to be super awkward. I'm going to be sitting there for a little while. No one's picked me up, but
that's great, man. And what was the family reaction like? Was it just elation, or because it has to be such a culminating feeling?
Yeah, it was awesome. We did it on Ole Miss campus, and I had like some of my guys that I played with behind me. It was kind of weird, like. I don't know. It was a pretty awesome. I think like at the time you just kind of, it's like this, like you're doing a video call,
And yeah. Then, right.
When you step outside of it, you have a chance to think about it and realize, oh shoot, that's what happened.
Yeah.
Kind of like it always hits me like that. It takes me a little time for it to have to take a step back and let it all sink in.
And process.
But it was awesome.
And process everything. Now, we got a glimpse into the minor leagues last week from our last guest, Brad Keller, and he had some wild stories. Where did you start off? What city, what town, what state did you start off in the minors? And you got any wild tales from
them? See, I started in Kinston, North Carolina.
Okay.
So my first year was wild. So I didn't play. I got drafted in 2010. I signed in August. Didn't play at all that year, and then comes to the next year. So my first spring training is 2011. I went in spring training with the Indians, that was a camp. Got sent down to minor league camp, and then got sent to high in Kinston, North Carolina. So that was like my first taste of pro ball, and it was fun. I mean, some of those towns, it's all bus rides and, AC broken on the bus and East Coast in the summer and hot as hell. There's all those kind of things going on. But for me, from there, I'll just go ahead and tell you the whole year because it's
please,
kind of,
yeah, we want to hear it all, man. We want to hear the come up.
So I'm there until I got picked to be on the Futures team. So I go to the Futures game, which is the fourth All-Star game. And I pitched there, but they told me, when you come back, you're going, I think when I came back from there, they're like, you're going to AA. So I'm like, all right. So I flew from, I guess the Futures game was in Phoenix, and then I flew back to North Carolina, got in my truck, drove like 14 hours to Akron.
Jesus.
I think I went home. I went home to my actual home in Tennessee like three times this year, which is crazy, which never happens. I mean, during baseball season.
Yeah, yeah.
So I drove, it was like 14 hours, some like 14 hours from North Carolina to Akron. And then what did I do?
They didn't fly you down. It's just like pick up and go. That's so old school.
Well, you had the option to do, you can fly whatever, but I was like, I have my car and I can fit everything in it, so I'm just gonna go.
Yeah,
it's gonna take off. So then I go there, I pitch like three times, and then I'm in the bullpen warming up for like, I don't remember the exact numbers. I call it my fifth start. We're in Akron, and I'm like, it's like 10 minutes before the game, I'm almost ready. And the phone rings in the bullpen, and the coach answers it, puts the phone down. He's like, hey, you're done, go inside. I'm like, wait, what's going on? And they're like, and then as I'm walking out, another bullpen guy hops up and starts getting ready real fast. And so I'm like awkwardly walking across the field when the game's in 10 minutes. I'm not, you know, going back in the clubhouse, and somebody passes me and like, hey, you just got traded. I'm like, this is my first year in pro ball. So I'm like, I don't know what's going on right now. So I just kept walking in. I go into the clubhouse and like, they're like, hey, you know, you're probably getting traded. They're trying to finalize some things. And I guess it was something like, so that was, I got traded to Colorado
for your ball. Yeah.
But I think like he was pitching that night. So like, and they didn't take him out during this. So he like threw like 100 pitches in 4 innings or something crazy. So then everyone, well, we need to make sure this guy's okay. And like,
yeah,
there was some stuff hung up, but all 4 guys that got traded, we were all in Akron. And so like the next couple of days while they're finalizing stuff, we're like, well, what do we do? We're just like,
super awkward. Huh?
Yeah, just everyone's like hanging out, not knowing what's happening.
Yeah. So, you know, we were like, you know, the next game, I'm like, you know, laying on the couch, just hanging out because I can't go out there. I can't do anything. And then, you know, and then it comes, okay, they announced that I was like, you know, like the lead guy getting traded, prospect. And, you know, and then it comes to find out that there's this rule that I can't actually be traded until you've been with the organization a year. So this is July 31st and I can't, you know, I signed August 16th. So like I couldn't actually be traded for 15 days. So then it's like, oh, player to be named later, but I'm already been named.
Yeah.
So then there's this awkward time where it's like, okay, what do you do? Like, and they're about to go on like a 10-hour bus ride. I'm like, I can't even play. Like, I'm not going on this bus ride. Like,
right.
Fuck this bus. I'm out of here.
Yeah, like, I'm literally on the bus and we're about to leave. And my agent calls me. He's like, get off the bus. So I get off right before they leave. And I'm pretty sure I went home. That's the first time I went home. I drove all the way to Memphis and I convinced, you know, we kind of convinced them to send me to Arizona.
Yeah.
Like for a weird period. So I go home and then I go get, you know, fly to Arizona. And then, you know, I'm traded, but I'm not technically allowed to be traded. So I have to go to the Indians facility in Arizona. But Colorado, I've already like been traded to Colorado. So like I go to the Cleveland place and no one like wants to tell me what to do. Because like they don't want to be the person to tell me,
Totally.
So I'm like just like doing whatever I want, you know, like I didn't know what to do. And Anthony Reyes was there at the time, like rehabbing. So I was just like working out and throwing with him and running with him and you know, trying to like keep my brain, you know, focused. Trying to like motivate myself the whole time. And, you know, sometime during that process, they tell me like, you're going to pitch a few times and you're going to get called up to the big leagues. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, it's my first year in Pro Bowl. You know, they tell me you're going to pitch a couple times and then call you up. So like, sorry, this is a long story, but
no, we want to hear it, man.
I love it.
We're in it. This is what we came for, baby.
So then I, you know, it comes the night before I can actually be traded. So they tell me they're going to send me to Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So, and like, hey, you're pitching this day. I was like basically pitching the next day. So going to Tulsa, go out. I haven't pitched in a game in 16 days. Like I was throwing to hitters, but no one was allowed to swing and it was super awkward. And I pitched in Tulsa this at a night game. I go like 6 2/3 innings. Perfect. I got a perfect game. 6 2/3. First time I pitched in 16 days. And I gave up a hit and then like came out on the 7th or 8th or something. So then, you know, I'm like, okay, well, I guess that went pretty good.
Yeah.
And then I wake up the next morning and I'm like, God, I don't feel good. I feel sick. Like, I feel like something's wrong. And like my stomach's killing me. And, you know, I go in, I like told the trainers, like, I don't feel good. Like something's up in my stomach. I thought I had to throw up, but I didn't. So like I go in and like, okay, you know, go to the emergency room. Jesus. And I'm like driving around Tulsa, like crunched over. I have no idea. Tulsa's roads are like the worst. They're like highways are like intertwining and all.
Oh yeah. We know middle America, man. We got you. Oh, yeah.
Brutal. So like I just pull up the emergency room by myself and I go in and they do some like scans, whatever, turns out I have appendicitis. So like, they're like, okay, we need to like take your appendix out right now. I'm like, right now? Like, I just pulled up.
Yeah.
So I called around and called my parents and like called, you know, I called the team and they're like, okay, I just get this done. So then I like basically a couple hours go by and I go into surgery. My parents drove from Memphis to Tulsa. And then, you know, trainers came, checked on me, whatever. So I had the surgery, wake up, and then I basically get in the car and go. They're like, okay, you're not going to do anything. I was like, okay, so can I just go home to Memphis? It was like 5 hours, something like that. And they're like, yeah, sure. So I'm like, all right. So I go home. That's the second time I went home that year.
Yeah.
This never happens. Like, and so then, you know, I'm there for a few days and basically, I mean, I was fine, like very quickly.
Yeah.
And so then I had gotten my truck again, met the team, and I want to say it was like Fayetteville in Arkansas somewhere or something, which wasn't a bad drive either. So I meet them, and then I have this plan to like ramp up and pitch. I mean, meanwhile, this whole time, like when I hear I have appendicitis, I'm like, well, you know, you hear all the time, like people miss their chance to get called up to the big leagues.
Yeah.
And all these things. What if, you know, what if I suck from here on and like, you know, I never get called up and like that was my chance and I just missed it.
Did you really think that would have, you really thought that could affect you like that? Or it kind of just throws your psyche a little bit?
The wheel starts spinning in your head.
Yeah.
Like, totally. What if this was my one shot? And then so I, you know, I met back up with the team. I had a plan to pitch the last game of the season. So then, you know, I ended up pitching the last game of the season. I started the game through three perfect innings again. So I had pitched really well in double A.
Yeah.
So then they took me out and I come in and the manager's like, you know, it's one of those moments where it's like, manager's like, you're pretty good. He's like, you think you can do that in Colorado? I was like, wait, what do you mean? He's like, your next start's going to be in the big leagues. And then by then, you know, I'm like freaking out.
Jesus.
So I did not expect it because no one had said anything to me. You know, I thought that.
You were totally in the dark. Yeah.
It's the most nonchalant sport. It's like, yeah, by the way, just pick it up and go. You're going to Akron tomorrow. Yeah. And don't get too comfortable because you're going to Tulsa, then Colorado. It's like.
Exactly. And then I like call everyone. I'm like, you know, freaking out. So then again, I, you know, season's over. So I get all my stuff, drive back to Memphis. So I'm there a third time and I go there for a couple days. And then I want to say it was, I don't remember the exact date, but they were like, you're pitching September 11th. So I had a few days. So I go back to Memphis, then flew up to Colorado and, you know, I had some time to gather, show up there. And like, this is all my first year. I'm like trying to get my feet wet in pro ball. I'm like, I'm in the big league, you know? And I debuted on the 10th year of 9/11. So it was like, you know, all this stuff going on, like American flag on the field, flyover, like, you know, everything happening. And, you know, it was awesome. You know, I had time to get all my family and my friends there. And just like that whole year, I'm just, after the year, I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is what pro ball's like.
Yeah, yeah, man.
Thank
God I have no more appendixes. There's only one in my body and I'm getting more removed. What's your feeling like before your first ever start compared to now? I mean, now you come out, now you're out of the bullpen, you've made a bunch of starts, you're a 17 game winner. How do those starts now compare to that first one? Is it really just something magical that you'll never forget, or is it kind of blend in with the rest?
You know, when I was first there, I wasn't really thinking too much. I pitched well in my first start. I won my first ever start.
It's great.
Against
five scoreless innings.
Yep, against the Reds and in Colorado. And, you know, and then I think I did pretty good. The second start, I did okay against the Giants. And then, you know, at the time, you don't really think about it. You know, you go out and pitch good, and it's like, oh, this is just like anything else, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was my third start. I'm pitching in Houston. This is when Houston's still in the National League.
Yeah.
I gave up like seven doubles in a row to lead off the game. Like,
Jesus.
They were like just trading places. It was like double and then double score, double score, double score. Oh my gosh. And it just, and like, you know, by then you just, that's where I first realized the game really speeds up on you because I don't even think they were taking pitches. Like, I threw like seven pitches, like seven doubles.
Seven for seven. Ridiculous.
That's what I felt like. And like by the time I like gathered myself and stepped off and was like, what the hell just happened? It was like 6-0 or something. And I'm like, you're just completely helpless. Like you have nowhere, you have nothing to do. Like, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah. when you get in a situation like that, like in games where like, you know, it's not going well for you. I mean, is the mindset like, okay, I got to get through this on my own? Or is it like, all right, come on, coach, like let's, you know, get some help going on here.
Yeah. I didn't know what to do. I was completely lost. Like it's the most helpless feeling in the world when you're pitching and like, you're just getting crushed because everyone has a phase and like, yeah. It doesn't matter what you do. You know, it's like, you know, it's wild, but I did end up getting my first major league hit that day. So at least like something good came out of it.
The theme of the pitchers love their first major league hit. It's a huge moment. Yeah. When you get traded to Colorado, if I may ask, now that that's in the past, as a pitcher, is it really kind of like, oh shit, I'm going to Colorado? Do you guys have that sentiment, or are you kind of just like, all right, another place to pitch?
Kind of, but at the same time, like I'm just getting, like I didn't really think about it that much because I never really. And like, definitely never pitched there. And like, I just had I didn't even have any expectations because I had no like base way to bet. You know, I had no experience in this. Sorry.
Yeah. You're good. Don't worry about it. Happens to us all the time, man. It's a man hunts around Los Angeles every day.
Yeah. I didn't really like think about it. I mean, you know, once you get there, you know, curveballs break a little different, but. You know, you just react to it. I mean, now I look back on it, you know, it definitely was weird. And I had, you know, every year was something, you know, and the next year, my rookie year there, we did the 4-man rotation, 75 pitch limit. It's like, there was just so many things going on. You know, I'm trying to get guys out, but I only have 75 pitches. And if I have 10 or less, I can't go back out for the next inning. And like, I'm a high pitch count guy. And like, that was how I was trying to learn how to play pro ball in the big leagues was, you know, like that. And it's as if it's not hard enough to get big league hitters out. You have, you know, you're on a pitch count and, you know, most of the time I went 4 innings and all you can get is a loss. You can't get a win.
Yeah. So totally. I mean, that's gotta be tough to get your footing, but you finally get you get your footing in a big way. In San Diego, what changes that all-star season for you? What was like the big shift for you?
Yeah, you know, I kind of started to get together. I came out of the bullpen at the end of 2013. It was like a process that led to it. End of 2013, I came out of the bullpen, pitched really well. You know, I thought like, okay, I'm going to do good in 2015 with the, 2014 with Colorado. Then I get traded, you know, for the second time at winter meetings. And, you know, I go to Oakland and there, like, I had no idea what was going to happen. Like, you know, you just come in to make the team. So you just kind of whatever expectation. I kind of had to reinvent myself a little bit and just kind of like remember what made me good and try and simplify things. Because when you're about to pitching, it's like, there's just, like I said, the game speeds up on you so fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your thoughts are just like all over the place and no one's going to help you. You know, you're out there by yourself.
Yeah, dude. It's one of the loneliest positions in the game in sports in general, pitcher, like swimmer and like Tiger Woods in golf. And like, it's just like you guys kind of alone on the mound.
Exactly.
So when you say reinvent yourself though, what does that mean? Like reinvent yourself in the clubhouse or within yourself in that sense?
Just pitching wise. And, you know, I actually that off season before then, I got to throw a few bullpens with Randy Wolf, and he was around, and you know, he really said something to me that like that made a lot of sense. He was like, you know, because in pitching, you know, every day, you know, sometimes every day it's like, okay, I need to, you know, stay back today. Okay, well, you go in the next day and you try and just stay back and, you know, use your legs more, and that doesn't work. So then it like. Every day your thoughts like evolve into something else and like you can't catch up because you're just every day you're changing your entire like, you know, mechanics. Mm-hmm. So he told me you need to sit down, you need to write down like what are my 3 most important keys to help me, you know, be consistent. And, you know, things that aren't going to change, things that you have to decide are what they are. So I, you know, I don't remember exactly what they were, but I had three things. And he's like, you know, then when you're pitching and it's like, man, that doesn't feel right, I can't throw a strike, you step off and you go through your checklist. You know, did I stay back? Did I, you know, make sure I got my arm up? Oh, didn't do that. Then you fix it. You know, it minimizes your window and helps, you know, they're throwing five pitches, it could be five homers. You know, you throw one pitch and you fix it faster, and then you kind of just get back on track, which was huge for me.
That's great. And you know what? I'm sure like every pitcher has something different. And how much are you guys picking up from each other? Like you say, you're picking up something from Andy Wolf, like, and which is probably passed down from another guy. And how much are you kind of now helping the younger guys as you're going to the clubhouse and now you're becoming a veteran? Like what's being passed around information wise?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've been traded five times. So like I've played with so many different people in like a short amount of time. I've been very lucky, very fortunate to play with a lot of veteran guys. And, you know, Boston was awesome. I mean, we had David Price, Rick Porcello, you know, Chris Sale, like I play with all these guys. And it's like, you just sit and you try and like, you know, even along the way, like, you know, Scott Kazmir, Sonny Gray, those watching those guys play. And, you know, you try and learn, you try and pick up information, like you try and just listen to everything and, you know, try and remember all of it. And I feel like that kind of like matured me very fast because I had to adapt to all these different situations.
Totally.
And, you know, I kind of try and like help when I can, but no, like, you know, I don't want to like step in and be like, oh, you need to do this, you know, but just kind of be there and give some helpful hints, you know, yeah, my experiences, because everyone goes through different stuff, has different thoughts going through their head, and, you know, deals with different things in different ways. But I try and just be like, you know, a help for people, because I've been really good, I've been really bad, I've been in a lot of different places. I've been very fortunate to experience like so many different things over the course of my career.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Go, Nick.
You talk about that you've been traded five times. I mean, what's that like going to a new team every single time? I mean, do you kind of look for people with familiar faces that you've played with in the past, or are you trying to kind of associate with someone new that, you know, you're like a fan of their career?
Yeah, I mean, it just, you know, sometimes it just depends on who you're hanging out with. You know, you normally hang out with starters, or if you knew a guy, or like Milwaukee last year, I'm hanging out in the bullpen. So I get to hang out with those guys most of the time. And, you know, you just, that's who you hang around. But it becomes like, I say all the time, the same shit, different place. You know, it's like doing the same thing. Everyone's doing the same thing at a certain point, you know. And I've known somebody basically everywhere. Like I go in every clubhouse and I know somebody. Yeah. And then, you know, some of the older guys, my brother played in minor leagues for a long time. He's 4 years older. So like me or him know someone, or there's definitely a connection with somebody. And kind of helps you, you know, adapt a lot quicker.
Yeah,
definitely.
Totally. And then the up and down thing is kind of wild, because you'll think you're on the down, Pomerantz is on the down, and next thing you know, the guy's an all-star and his lights out in San Diego. And what's the feeling like going from San Diego, you're crushing it, and then they go, okay, you're going to the Red Sox. Are you a little sad that you're leaving a place where you're on fire, or are you excited, or is it a mix of both that you're going to a winning organization?
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, I really reinvented myself then, and I started using my curveball usage went like through the roof, and I started just dominating guys. I barely squeaked into the All-Star game, even though I had really good numbers. But, you know, I felt like I should have been there, but, you know, I was very lucky. I think I was like the last guy added in there. And I was really comfortable. You know, I pitched really well basically the entire time. And so I was like, oh, I could get traded, because I've been traded a few times at this point. And I guess I've been traded three times already, I think. Jesus. And I go to the All-Star game, and, you know, we start talking. I'm like hanging around like Kershaw and Bumgarner and like all these guys. We're all like throwing Scherzer and all these guys. And Kershaw's like, you're definitely getting traded. You know, I'm like,
ruthless. And I'm like,
the guy who's never been traded tells you that.
Yeah. Dude, and like, it kind of got real. I was like, okay, yeah, I'm probably going to. Then I started like really thinking about it. I was like, yeah, I'm probably going to get traded.
And then, yeah.
literally the next day that all this stuff starts coming out, and I didn't hear anything like all day. We had an optional workout, but I just pitched in the All-Star game, so I'm like, I'm not gonna go in and do anything because I pitched. I didn't get a break really, because All-Star game's like, it's a lot going on. You know, it's awesome, it's amazing, but it's definitely not a break. You know,
no way.
You soak it all in, and it was like one of the coolest things ever. Like playing in my home ballpark, you know, that was like, it was amazing. So then the stuff the next day, like it's coming out on ESPN, whatever, and I've still heard nothing. And then, you know, something was the hang up, and then it all went through. So that was pretty wild, but it's another turning point in my career that, you know, just adapt to a new place.
Yeah. And then you go to Boston, your first full season in Boston, you rack up 17 wins. Now, I know they're like the baseball snobs of the day are quality starts and wins, all that nonsense. But you get 17 wins, your shit's hot, fam, as they say nowadays. So what is that feeling like to be a 17-win pitcher, to have that in your career? Did you ever think you'd get to that point? You ever think you'd get to an All-Star game, you know?
Yeah, I think I won something like 10 games in a row that year or something wild.
Oh, and yeah, dude, as a fan, you were hot, bro. Step on the mat. I'm like, all right, let's go, baby. Let's get it going.
Yeah. I was pretty locked in. You know, I stayed pretty locked in that whole year. You know, it was amazing. Like, to do it in a place like Boston, like, you know, I tell people I've had the best year of my career followed by the worst year of my career in Boston. So I've seen, like, full spectrum of what it's like to play in Boston. You know, all the love and all the hate and everything in between. You know, but it was, I mean, it was great. It was to the point where, like, I think I came out of a game in Toronto and maybe I threw six innings or something. And, you know, it was like 1-1 or something. And, you know, we're down to two outs the inning and I'm still like the pitcher on record. All of a sudden we hit a home run and it's just like, oh my gosh, like here comes
another one for Pomeranz.
They were just rolling in, you know, and that was like the best feeling ever. I was like, we needed to win and we were winning everything. You know, you feel like you can't, you know, you feel like you can't do anything wrong. I mean, and then there's the other side with next year was like, I couldn't do anything right.
Yeah.
So I definitely experienced all of it there.
And those Boston fans are ruthless too.
Bro, when you hang it up, you know, down the line, Drew, go sit in the right field bleachers for Sox Yankees when you get a chance. It's like the only place I'll go with my dad. We'll drive up from New York when I was younger and sit in the right field bleachers. And the Yankee fans are crazy, obviously, and the Southies are just going there to drink and get in fights and kicked out. It's utter mayhem in the right field bleachers. Feeling?
That was my first. When I first met up with the team in 16, they're like, you can take a couple of days and meet us in New York. I met him in New York for Sunday night baseball for Yankees Red Sox. And, you know, he was just like thrown right into the fire.
Jesus.
You know, like, playing on the West Coast and playing on the East Coast was like two different worlds.
Yeah.
You know, it was really like, I probably needed that to kind of like jolt me into like, okay, like strap in, let's go, you know?
Yeah. What was the season, you know, the off season like for that Red Sox team? Because I'm used to saying that as a fan, but you guys fell short. You guys fell short a little bit the year before to the Astros. What's the off season like for you guys to come in and kind of change things around? Mookie goes from an All-Star level player to an MVP. JD Martinez comes in and takes it up a notch. Like, what's the feeling like in the clubhouse? Is there a different air, or are you guys taking it personally last year and kind of, you know, trying to get this thing done?
And you're talking about 2018, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're all feeling good. We're, you know, pissed about getting put out by the Astros the year before, and you know you're focused on, like, you know, progressing. We got put out, you know, basically, weirdly enough, I think every time I've been in the postseason and been put out, it's been by a team who goes to the World Series. So, like, you know, you don't want to be that team. Like, in 2014 we got beat in the wild card game by the Royals, who went all the way to the World Series.
Yeah.
2015, we got put out by the Indians. They went all the way to the World Series. 17, Astros. And then, you know, 18, we won. We were the team to win the World Series. And then last year, we got put out by the Nationals.
I forgot about that. Jesus, that was heartbreaking. I felt how you feel as a fan. Sometimes you're watching, you feel for a guy. That's just like a, it just happens.
Yeah. And, but yeah, going into that year, it was like, you know, we were feeling good. You know, we had a good rotation. We had picked up JD. We were feeling really good going into that. I got hurt early in spring training.
Yeah.
So I kind of pushed back. I think the part that hurt me was I came back way sooner than I should have. Mm-hmm. I should have taken more time, but it's hard because you're so competitive. You're like, I need to get back now. I want to help the team. But that's just, you know, it's just turned into that year I was talking about where you can't do anything right. But thankfully, I'm pretty sure that I sucked in all of the bad energy that year because I was like the only guy to have a bad year. And everyone had record years and, you know, we obviously end up going all the way through the World Series. So it was pretty awesome and strange at the same time being the brunt of all of that.
It's when you're in the World Series, you know, the team there, I was at the game. I was at game five and you had a better seat. I told you before the show started that we were at the same game, just in a different spot. And the guy like Steve Pierce, like out of nowhere, what's the vibe in the locker room when a guy like that, you know, who's been around, is a journeyman, hasn't had his real moment to shine, is just coming through. And it's like he's like the most kind of like Boston come through kind of guy, like blue collary, even though I don't even know if he is. He just has that vibe about him. Steve Pierce sounds like such a blue collar name. You know, what's the vibe like in the locker room when a guy like that steps up?
Man, it was pretty cool to see. And you always see, you know, in World Series or playoff runs, guys are stepping up.
But yeah,
we also had Nathan Eovaldi, who was just like a complete animal throughout that whole World Series. And that was pretty unbelievable to watch because the first couple rounds I wasn't on the roster, so I'm like I was in the dugout just screaming my head off the whole time, like trying to, you know, just be the best cheerleader I can, you know. And to see what those guys did, it's, you know, Steve and Nate, like that was almost like what he did in that extra inning game was like superhuman almost.
Oh yeah.
I remember where we were. We were in our old apartment, packed, and there's like Boston guys that we're friends with out here, like real Boston guys, and everyone's packed and watching him work and just go, and like in a losing effort too, and like everyone at the end of the game was like, I've never seen a pitcher lose a game and get that much kudos. It kind of similar like to the Jordan doc where Jordan drops 63 in the Garden against the Celtics and lose, and everyone's like, whoa. Not talking about the Celtics winning, where they're talking about MJ losing. It was kind of like one of those performances.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I mean, we came in, and I think Corey even said us that, like, we lost and we were pissed, but he was like, he came in, and everyone, he was like, get everyone in here. He's like, I want you guys to think about what this guy just did for the team, like made a point to, you know, show like for all of us to just take a second to realize like he just put everything on the line. Like he could have injured himself, could have done a lot of things, you know, just, you know, doing everything he can to help the team. And like even losing, like just seeing what he did just makes you like become even more of a team, you know, because you see like, you know, you have to give everything you possibly can. You know, everyone has a role, you know, and you don't want to be the guy who doesn't, you know, do their job, you know.
Totally. I mean, and people like, you know, it's people think baseball is so like such an individual sport because of the way they count stats, but it's really so important. I mean, each guy in the bullpen is such a vital piece. I mean, look at the new, you know, not to talk dollars and cents with you, but look at the new deal you just got. You know, like every piece in the bullpen is so vital nowadays, and every guy off the bench is so vital. Like they're looking at the Reds right now, and if there's a DH in the NL, all of a sudden the Reds have gotten one of the most dangerous teams in baseball because they stockpile their outfielders, and now they have guys they can rotate in the DH spot. It's a completely different ballgame. You have so many guys, and it's 25 man for a reason, you know?
Now 26.
Now 26. Now, thank God, man. I love guys getting a shot. And then getting another shot, you go to San Fran, and then things aren't working out as well, and then you go to Milwaukee, and then you're like the Giants. Every other team, you're like the Pomeranz trades. Like now you're going off in Milwaukee. What's changing for you there? What's the vibe like there in the clubhouse that allows you to kind of bring the best out of you?
You know, when I worked really hard the year before, you know, when I signed with the Giants,
yeah,
didn't get a deal I wanted, but you know, they gave me an opportunity, a huge opportunity, which I really wasn't getting much from anyone. And so I worked really hard. I put on a bunch of weight, and the problem the year before was like I thought my velo was down. So I made a point to, okay, I'm not, my velo is not going to be the problem this year. So I'm like eating everything, I gained like, I don't even know, like probably like 20 pounds, like from the start of the spring training to start of the next spring training, it was probably somewhere between 15 and 20 pounds.
Wow.
And, you know, I worked really hard at that, and you know, my velocity came back, everything pretty much came back, but I still wasn't getting results like that whole time there. Once June hit for me, I made some adjustments and I really started pitching a lot better. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we come back from All-Star break and I was supposed to pitch like a certain day, whatever. And then when I show up, it was actually in Milwaukee, I was still with the Giants. They're like, okay, you might be pitching game five. I'm like, what the hell's changed? Like no one's told me anything, you know? And so I was in the bullpen, like helping out for the first series. And then they're like, okay, you're going to pitch, you know, and then from there we went to Colorado and I was like still helping out. And they're like, if you don't pitch, you're going to start, you know, the fifth game or whatever after the break. So I pitch really good, you know, into the sixth inning basically and dominate. Mm-hmm. The weird thing was that game is I had like, something like my big thing has always been my curveball. Like,
yeah, totally.
I've always had my curveball. And, you know, I have, you know, you can't pitch primarily a fastball. I found a cutter in 2016 when San Diego. But so going into that game, I throw it different. I like spike it and I flick it straight forward. So it's a lot of pressure on like my pointer finger. And I keep a little bit of a fingernail because it just helps me feel the seam. I don't know. It's probably a mental thing.
Awesome. I love intricate as hell.
But so I had like broken my fingernail. I split it down to like, you know, down to where the skin meets the nail. Mm-hmm. And like, it hurts so bad that I couldn't, like, I tried to throw a curveball in warmups and like, it literally shot pain through my whole body. Cause must be like a nerve or something like that. It was terrible. So I'm like, well, shit, like I can't throw my curveball, you know, like what the hell am I going to do? So like, I was like, okay, I'm going to commit to being fastball cutter this day, you know? And I go out there and no one knew this. I didn't want anyone to know because then they would just not be sitting on it, you know, and, or just cancel it out. So I go and pitch that whole time like that. And I pitched really well. I'm like, okay, well, I'm sure going to, you know, won that little mini battle there, freak out. And I'm like, I'm probably gonna, you know, I'm gonna have a better second half. So then basically some conversations are happening and you're going to the bullpen. So I'm like not happy about it. I was pissed. I'm not gonna lie. Like I was pissed. Like everyone talked to me, you know, telling me you're on the bullpen, just blah, blah, blah. I was just really not happy about it. So I decided to kind of channel that into like, you know, the first time I came out of the bullpen, I was just throwing as hard as I could, like grunting on every pitch. And all of a sudden I look up and I'm throwing like 96. And I'm like, I guess it's that easy. Get pissed off and just throw as hard as I can. So that kind of started all of it. And so then from then on, basically I get traded and I just did that every time. I pitched like four or five times and all of a sudden like people are calling and asking to trade for me is what I heard. And then, you know, I just kind of ran with it. You know, I just was like basically max effort. And because I'd put on that weight, you know, it helped me, you know, the year before I topped out probably like, maybe once I had 93 or something, but then, you know, then I'm like 90, you know, all the way up to 98 like last year, you know. It's like, it was crazy to like, for me to be like, just year, just from one year, you know, just to totally just change everything.
It It's so nuts how that one tick of a, like one or two ticks in the radar gun just really makes a difference. And the common, I feel like people just don't realize that. I remember like watching the, you know, the decline of the Freak, right? And Lindsey comes throwing, he's going from like 98 to like 94, and 94 is still fast, but it's not 98. And the decline of the Dark Knight, when the Dark Knight became Bruce Wayne, you know, when he's going from like 98 to like 94, it like makes such a massive difference. And these ticks up and down the radar are just huge. And it changes the kind of preparation I feel for a hitter who knows you at this point, because you've been in the big leagues for a minute and they're expecting 93, they're expecting the curve, and all of a sudden they're getting hit with a 96 mile per hour fastball. It's a completely different thing to prep for.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there's also like another factor too. It's like sometimes the velocity drops, the ball just comes out different. Like
yeah.
When I'm right, I'm throwing right. And then when I'm hurt and I'm throwing 92, it's like two different. It's like you feel like you're throwing a shot put to the plate, as opposed to like when I'm feeling good, it's like I'm throwing it literally through the catcher. It has like a different theory. Me especially, always had like good rise in my fastball and good ride, and that's part of it. Like I found that like that, you know, that extra gear on my, you know, velocity, yes, but also just like driving the ball in there. And it really, that combined with the velocity, just that's what helped me go, you know, on that tear that I did.
Yeah, and you go on the tear, and then all of a sudden the place you didn't want to be is your new home. You're crushing it in the bullpen, and that's got that's got you the new deal. What was the decision like to go play in San Diego? Obviously, Nick over here is a huge Padres fan. I've been hearing for the last 2.5 years of my life that they're going to win the World Series. So they're clearly a team on the rise somehow.
One day.
I mean, please, for the love of God, for this person, my buddy. Yeah. What's the decision like to go, though, back to San Diego? As far as, like, you know, how your family's deciding, what all plays factors for you?
You know, they came out pretty strong. And, you know, I had a few teams come out pretty strong. And want to sign me, which is kind of crazy because the year before, like, we were getting like nothing.
Yeah.
Wow. And, you know, I have 2 good months, and then all these teams want to sign me. And like, basically everyone's in, you know, everyone's that's calling, you know, from my agent is in. And, they came out strong, and I had a few offers that were close, but it just came, I literally had no bad experience. My favorite place I ever lived was here. We had a condo like right on the beach in La Jolla. And like, you know, I pitched so good every time. I make the All-Star game at home park. I had literally like no bad like memories here, like none.
Yeah.
And so them wanting to sign me that bad, it just made it that much easier to be comfortable with there. Like there's like no, you have no doubt making that decision. It's like me and my wife both loved every second we were there. So it was just really nice to, you know, to be back. And I love the organization. I like the people here too. So it was, you know, it just worked out so good.
Yeah, and it's an exciting team, honestly. You obviously have FTJ, who's one of the hottest young guys in baseball. But Machado, even on a Machado down year, he's still hitting. Hosmer's won before. You've won before. You know, Mackenzie Gore is a guy in the minors who everyone's going to know his name in a few years because he's just absolutely lights out. So prior to the offseason, what's the vibe in the clubhouse like for you guys heading into the season?
New manager too. Yeah, I mean it was really good. You know, it was definitely a much different feeling than the last time I was here.
Yeah.
We have some different guys in the clubhouse, and you know, we kind of gotten the older guys together, and we were talking about just pushing the team in the right direction, and just kind of having like, you know, we want to win here. Like we want to win. We have the guys to win. We just need to figure out what that, you know, that special formula is to like to actually win. So we have all the guys. We have our bullpens, you know, ridiculous. You know, we have a lot of good starters. We got, you know, Paddock and some of those young guys are really good. We got Garrett Richards, disgusting. And you know, we got Manny, we got Hosmer, we got Tatis, we got Tommy Pham, we got all these guys. And you know, we have the team to do it. And you know, we were feeling like I was feeling really good about where our season was going. And then obviously we had the hold up and all of this, but you know, I'm still pretty confident that I think we're going to do really well if we get back to playing this year.
I'm confident too.
The Fam pickup was sneaky. I love that one. What's your, if you don't mind divulging, you don't have to go full into it. How are you feeling about the way things are going right now? Because I saw a Marcus Stroman tweet, and he's vocal. I know that. I know he's one of the vocal ones. But how are you feeling about how things are going right now? Are we going to see a season? Because us as baseball fans are just praying for it.
Yeah, I mean, we all, you know, I think we all want to play. I think a lot of stuff came out today. I'm really not, you know, that caught up to know exactly what's going on. But, you know, I think that, you know, I hope we play and we all want to play. So hopefully, you know, hopefully we come to some sort of agreement. We can get this started sooner than later.
So you're kind of just Bud Light down for whatever, let them hash it out. And you're just going to come in. You're just going to come in and rip it when it's time.
Yeah. I just, you know, I hope that we can find some sort of compromise here.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I'm just trying to stay mentally ready to do what I need to do and make sure that I'm ready to do my part, you know, if we end up playing. So.
That's great, man.
Drew, everything that you've said just like about your career and reflection just like makes me think about, you know, how you've been to so many different places. Even when you're in the minors, you're hopping around into so many different cities. And that's an experience that a lot of other guys in the MLB have also had, where a lot of times you guys are just getting moved around like chess pieces. Talk about just like for you, like the mental grind and like how you kind of stay engaged to – because you have all these other factors that are happening, and then you got to go pitch. Like, yeah. how do you stay in it? Is it just as simple as taking it day by day, or what's kind of your process like?
I mean, I remember the first time I got traded when I was awkwardly at Indians' place in Arizona, and like I was like, how am I gonna keep myself motivated? Like, I need to like stay like mentally focused, and like I literally did something as simple like. I like wrote, you know, you're like the cheesy, like I wrote on my mirror in my hotel bathroom, like just like stay ready or something like that. Just so every day I saw it and like just tried to like mentally like, because I was having a really good year at that point too. And like you just have to like stay focused on the goal, you know, you focused on, you know, what, you know what makes you good and just keep that, you know, keep that in focus. And, you know, over time, I've really learned to just simplify things, you know, like I said, with the Randy Wolf stuff. And like, I've had a lot of different things where I just try and keep my thoughts, like, you know, when you're freaking out and you're a rookie, all your thoughts are like this, but you have to kind of narrow that focus into like, just really just making things as simple as you possibly can. So, you know, it just takes a lot of the pressure off of yourself.
Yeah. That's great, man. To kind of put the blinders on. It's such a mental game. I mean, we've heard guys talk about, you know, how the littlest mental tweaks, you know, I brought up Joel Hanrahan last time. So random. I never thought I'd throw his name out on the podcast, but he talked about in an interview, a mental tweak he had. I'll use it every time. Yeah, a mental tweak he had in an interview where he was pitching like dog shit. And then he kind of just changed like his composure, you know, on the mound. And it's different. You know, it's such a game. It's such a chess match, like you're saying, Toss. We got a couple more for you, Drew, though. These are little fun ones. Now, you know, I assume you've been a fan of the game for a long, long time. You've played the game for a long time now. Your favorite sports memory. Your favorite sports memory. Could be you playing. Could be you watching. Anything.
I don't know. Oh, man. I'll tell you one. What's kind of a funny story. So when I was like 9 years old, I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and the Cardinals and I don't know if it's my favorite sports memory, but this is one thing I remember, and I like it all comes full circle. But so Cardinals and Redbirds, Cardinals AAA would always have an exhibition game every year. So like I'm 9 years old, and you know I'm down there getting autographs from people. Like I get all these. I get Sean Dunson, who was in San Francisco when I was there, so I get to meet him. And then, you know, the big ticket item is Mark McGwire. So like, you know, I I'm waiting, I have like my ticket, I have my ball, and I'm like, okay, he's like, hey, can you sign my ball? Or I sign my ticket, sure. And he's like, sure, I'll sign. I was like, hey, can you sign my ball? And he's like, wow, only one autograph. And I'm like, oh my God, it like crushed me. So then, like, I always remember that. And I still remember that when I saw an autographs for people. Like, I remember that moment. So then fast forward to when I'm in San Diego the first time, Mark McGwire is our bench coach.
Oh.
So then like, I get to, like, talk to him about that. Like, we like talk about, like I told him and he's like, oh my, he like realized, oh, it's pretty cool, you know, like different players have had these moments with players growing up. I mean, you reach
please back. Tell me he signed the ball for you.
No, I didn't ask him to resign. Like we were just kind of like laughing about it because, you know, here I am in the big leagues myself and you have this whole new perspective on like, yeah. My perspective then was like, oh man, you know, how can I, like, this sucks. Like he wouldn't sign my ball for me. And my perspective now is like, sometimes when you go out there and there's like, how am I going to sign all of these autographs? You know?
Yeah.
And like, I want to so bad. It's like, it's a whole, like you see it like a whole different way, you know? I'm not going to be mad at him anymore.
Man, I think all three of us have probably had that situation when we were kids, you know, going up early before the game, trying to get autographs and get turned down. It's crushing as a kid, but you get it now. Like
I was always that loser that forgot a pen. I was like, fuck, I did it again.
Can I borrow your pen? Can I borrow your pen?
I get someone Sharpie. McGuire, though, they're coming out with this documentary on him. And what's it like? He's viewed as one way by the baseball community, but like getting to know him, like how did that change your perspective on a guy like that?
You know, I loved him. You know, I would have always, you know, I think he's an awesome guy. I was always joking around with him. You know, when I was hitting, I would be like, you know, like messing around. I'd step out of the box and like glare at him, you know, like just messing around during game stuff.
You hit a home run with San Diego.
I did, yeah. I hit my second one. I actually hit my first home run in San Diego, but I hit my second one with San Diego.
Yeah, so, now we know why you want to go back to San Diego.
Pitchers are now, great,
now there's the DH, but...
I think my computer's about to die. I'm gonna log back. Can I log back in with my...
your phone?
Log back in with the link. Yeah, with my phone.
Yeah, totally, yeah. Man. Totally. Log back in with your phone. And then we'll close it out in a few.
Let me find... Okay, yeah, let me log back in 1 second.
Gotcha, man.
All right.
Cool, dude.
That bird was a beautiful singer.
That bird was, oh, there we go. Now we get a different view. Look at that, up close and personal, baby. You got us?
Hear me?
Yeah, we're
we got you.
You're golden, man. Now I can see that you're rivaling Nick for the quarantine beard. Fresh face is gone. A guy like McGuire, I mean, it's crazy. I'm sure, you know, it's like, it's so, I'm curious to see how the whole thing is broken down, because it's watching the Lance Armstrong one and there's no excuse for what he did. It's just such a conundrum. We had an interview this morning where our guest was talking about it, and he was saying that on one hand the guy is, you know, Livestrong, cancer advocate, on the other hand he's a cheater. You know, and I'm curious to see how they portray McGuire and portray Sosa, because on one hand, yeah, he cheated the game, but on the other hand, everybody but Griffey's doing it pretty much, you know, and all these guys are good guys, you know, and it's hard to separate. So it's kind of interesting to hear you say that you loved him, you know, and you separated that. Did you expect to? Were you nervous kind of to be around him, having him back in the game kind of deal, or it didn't really faze you?
I mean, the thing on my head was that autograph session. You know what I mean? Think about is I got your autograph, and like I'm like waiting for the moment when I'm gonna drop that on him and be like, hey, when so this one time when I was not.
That's funny.
Funny. I just remember it was like we were just in the outfield and talking. He was just like laughing. He's like, really? He's like, well, he's like, I've heard this story before, and a lot of times. He's like, do you still have the autograph? I'm like, yeah, still got it pinned up on in my bedroom at home. Because he's like, a lot of people lose them, surprisingly. I guess that's like a common thing that he's heard. Is, you know, people, you know, they wait for that autograph and then, you know, they lose it, you know, within the last 20 years or whatever.
There's got to be a billion Mark McGuire items in pawn shops that are out there.
He's just out there right now. One pawn shop completely dedicated to it in St. Louis. We'd love to ask, we ask our last pitcher this, we'll ask you this. Outside of Drew Pomeranz, who are your top five in order pitchers in baseball right now? Your top five guys.
Man. That's tough. I mean, you obviously have to throw DeGrom in there. He's pretty unbelievable.
Two for two with DeGrom being first. He's dirty.
Gosh. He's nasty. Scherzer's fun to watch. he's just so all out every time.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta turn my baseball brain back on because, like, all this, like, having being at the field, you know, it's, you know, not seeing any. I can't think. Let's see.
Rainforest Cafe.
Man, let me think of who else. You know, yeah, I know he's, you know, having, you know, I think he had Tommy John, but Sale, like.
Yeah. When he's on, he's on.
He's the, and he's the, like, the best guy ever. So, like, that, you know, he's awesome, and he is so nasty. And it's just, like, I like watching lefties, you know. I am partial to the lefties.
Yeah.
I like seeing nasty lefties. It's always, always fun for me to see.
Nasty lefties are, while you're thinking, nasty lefties are just, they're so much more intimidating, I feel, to a hitter. I think Randy Johnson kind of, you know, set that trend for, like, the 2000s on. But, like, a really good lefty that could kind of dominate the order. Like, Johan was filthy. Cliff Lee was, like, disgusting. All these guys. And they just had, like, a just a different air about them. Mad Bum, when he hawks his arm back, it's just like, Jesus, yeah. Bro. I was like, Chapman, who Nick thinks in 100 at-bats he can get contact off. I was like, after the first pitch of Chapman throws, I'm going back to the dugout. You know what I'm saying?
he's pretty fun to watch too. I don't know. It's hard to narrow it down to five. I just enjoy watching, you know, pitchers and, you know, guys like Gerrit Cole who are just all out every pitch.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it kind of morphs into what I'm feeling like now. I'm like this all out, you know, throw everything as hard and nasty as I can. So I like watching those guys a lot too. Like, someone like, you know, I've also played with on Team USA, and like, he's just, you know, he's, every fastball is so hard and every breaking ball is so nasty. Like, it was just really fun for me to watch.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's just when your team has a good pitcher, it's just like the floodgates open for that franchise. You know, it's just such a vital piece. I remember when the Sox acquired Sale, you know, I was thinking, I'm like, Jesus, you know what? I'm buying this jersey on MLB Shop right now. Just don't give me a Carl Crawford situation. Just don't Crawford me, because I remember I did the same thing as a kid. I bought the Crawford thing. I'm like, don't do this to me again. And when he's on, man, he is just – it's so – and, like, that confidence. And it's so different watching pitcher to pitcher, all of them be so effective and kind of, like, you know, like we were discussing at the top of the show, it's such a mental difference for all these guys. Like, you have your thing. Sale has his thing, and you could see it in their demeanor. Scherzer's, like, got that Mad Max type deal, and DeGrom's, like, cool as a cucumber. But they're both so great at the same time. It's a good pitcher is a beautiful thing to watch.
That's what's been really cool for me, is like being able to play with all those different guys. Like, sometimes I have to, you know, sit back and just be like, man, it's just, you know them on a different level, and then just watch, you know, you watch them and they're nasty, and then you get to play with them, and it's like, you know, just, you just have this whole perspective. And I try and, like, you know, soak up as much information as I can from, you know, some of these guys. You know, even like David, you know, David Price, I watched him for so long, and like, he's awesome, and he is nasty. And, you know, I still remember seeing him, like, when he first came up with the Rays, you know, and he's just like, you know, he was SDC Vanderbilt guy. Like, so you look up to these guys who, you know, you want to take the same path they take. And it's just been really awesome for me to get, you know, have the experience to play with these guys.
Yeah.
You talk about looking at, like, having guys that you're going after. I read somewhere that your great grandfather, did he play in the bigs? Right? Yeah. Isn't that?
Yeah, great grandfather Garland Buckeye played, like, back when Babe Ruth was playing. So
wow. That name is, yeah. I can't believe that name didn't get passed down. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Drew Pomeranz has some swag, but Garland Buckeye IV would have been badass coming out of the bullpen.
Yeah, it's my dad's middle name is Buckeye, so at least that came down a little bit. But
was that talked about when you and your brother were younger, just like whispered into your ear, like, hey, your great grandfather did it, you can do it too, kind of thing?
I think it was more that, is, you know, to be honest, it is kind of what kind of shaped us, because my, you know, he, you know, I don't know exactly, like, he was around when my dad was learning baseball, and he was like a very hard nosed, like guy, and very just like less talk, more action guy, you know, like, that's kind of the way me and my brother both were raised growing up from my dad, is like, are you going to talk about what you're going to do, or are you going to go actually do it? You know, like, you know, you kind of, we grew up with that attitude, was like, I'm going to shove this ball up your ass, basically. And that's like, that's like the approach that we had every day. My dad's super competitive, super athletic. So like, we, you know, he pushed us, you know, really hard, and we wanted to be good. And like, that's what, you know, kind of trickle effect from him kind of, you know, came onto us, and what shaped, you know, my mentality towards baseball. And it's, you know, it's pretty cool.
And
that's awesome.
It's always awesome to hear like those, you know, family roots of, you know, athletes. That doesn't matter what sport it is. It's always cool to kind of hear that lineage. That'd be an interesting name to put on the Players Weekend jersey, Garland Buckeye, as the player's nickname.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what's your, you have one nickname before we let you go. What's your nickname? I saw it somewhere. Do you have one?
Big Smooth.
Where does that come from?
It actually, when I got traded to Boston, I think I was on the bus, and I think Price and Porcello were in the back, and I think Porcello, they were trying to come up with a nickname for me. And then Porcello just started screaming Big Smooth at me, and like it just became thing. So it was pretty funny.
That's awesome, man. That's great.
Your wife ever hear anyone call you that and be like, "What? What did they just say?"
Whoa!
Big Smooth. Like,
what?
I'm like, I don't know. Like, I did not come up with this nickname.
right.
Yeah.
No deeper. No idea. This is not, I'm not self-proclaimed Big Smooth.
Before we let you go, I know we got some Padres fans that are probably going to listen to this. Who are some guys that that you've seen that's really going to impress some people and turn some heads on the team this year?
I mean, our bullpen's going to be ridiculous. Our, you know, what's cool for me to see is like you see Tatis like, you know, from one side, and you know he plays so hard and he's so electric and fun to watch. And then, you know, the biggest thing that jumps out of my mind is we had like a hitter's game, like middle of what was spring training, and you know we had some pitchers. You know, you're on teams where you get to like pick guys, and we picked like our teams and played. So Tatis was on my team, and like that's the first time I'd really actually seen him hit, and like, we're on like a curveball machine on a backfield, and this guy's just launching balls. Like, he's just absolutely like hitting balls on the street over the fence. I think that was the first time I was like,
barely 21 years old too.
Yeah. And then we go to like another machine that's throwing fastballs, and he's just taking them out, like, you know, dead center, oppo, pull. Like, he's got like the same power to all fields, and it's pretty pretty unbelievable to see, you know, the type of athlete he is.
Any young pitchers that people might not know right now that are going to know them really later on in the year?
I mean, we're going to see McKenzie at some point. You know, he's been so, you know, he's pitched so well. He's an awesome guy as well.
I think Patino as well.
Yeah, Patino, yeah. You know, I really didn't get to see a lot of some guys.
I want Paddock to take the next step, man. I think Paddock's got the stuff, bro. I think he could take that next step to the upper echelon. We saw some of it last year.
Yeah, he's good. I think Garrett Richards is going to have a really good year this year. He's so bad. I remember being on the other side when I was in Oakland. And he's filthy.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a fun one to watch this year, too.
Yeah, man.
Good stuff, man.
Good stuff for the Padres. We're glad you're over there. We'll have to, when things are back to normal, we're a quick drive away from Los Angeles. When you're in here, we'll come watch you. We'll shoot on down to there with our mutual friend Nacho. Quick shout out to him for linking us up. Who, great friend, worst sports takes on the planet. Just don't talk basketball with the guy. And then Drew Pomerantz, everybody. Drew, thank you so much, man. We loved it. Can't wait to run it back in the future. And guys, go root for the Padres with Nikki Snacks-Kreider and our boy now, Drew Pomerantz.
Thanks, awesome.
Brother.
Thanks,
guys. Of course, man. And just a friendly reminder, we are brought to you by our friends at betonline.ag. Betonline.ag. Go to betonline.ag, and they will match your deposit. That's right. The match your deposit with a little welcome bonus with the code MYPOD100, betonline.ag. Go there, bet on something, bet on futures, bet on the casino. Get money, get paid. Thank you guys so much for listening to an awesome show. We loved having Drew and can't wait to have him back postseason. Please, God, give us a season, right? We all want the MLB to come back. Thank God the NBA is coming back, which is great. And, yeah, to the fans out there, drag both feet inbound, swing on a full count, rip that puck, hit that putt, hit your PKs because they free, and hit your free throws. Why, guys? Because they're free. We will have a 8-second moment of silence for George Floyd and all those who have lost their lives to police brutality. We love you. We stand with you. We out you. We love you.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.